For the inhabitants of Marath pined for good, but disaster came down from the Lord to the gate of Jerusalem. O inhabitant of Lachish, harness the chariots to the swift steed. She was the beginning of sin and the daughter of Zion, for the transgression of Israel was found in you. Therefore you shall give presents to Moresh Gath. The house of Ashbed shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. Does anyone happen to recognize this? Unless it was just by a little bit of time and chance and you were studying this particular part of the Bible, probably don't recognize this. Now, if you can't identify that passage, knowing where in the Bible it is, I'll be quite impressed. This is a few verses from the book of Micah. So I've been going through with my family the minor prophets. And studying the minor prophets is a bit of a challenge, at least for me. Kind of read through some of the passages like we just read through, and it's like, what do I take from this? How do I learn from this? How do I read these books and gain something from them? They're in the Bible. They're there for a good reason. So what can we do? So as I went through each of the books, and we're not quite done. We've got one left to finish. Hopefully we can finish that tonight. We'll see. But I was kind of thinking about what are some strategies that I can use to better study these books. And so I wrote down and thought about and came up with a number of strategies. So I want to go through those today with you to help potentially help you guys, help all of us in our study of the minor prophets, how we can get more out of these minor prophets. So let me give you a preview, and then I'll give you the list, and then we'll go through each one by one. First of all, if you have an understanding and an overview and a purpose of the book before you start studying, that can be a big benefit. So if you know what you're about to read, and then you read it, it's probably going to connect better. So I think that's one strategy you can use. As you're going through the minor prophets, you can learn a lot. If you take a look and focus and think about, I'm going to learn what people are like, what I'm like, what the people in those days were like, what God thinks about people. And if you take that approach as you study, I think you're going to gain some knowledge there. You can understand and take that approach of, I'm going to learn what God's like. I'm going to read through these books, and I'm going to figure out and learn more about God. That's another approach. And then what I would offer to you is that consider the interesting things that you come across in the minor prophets. There are so many things in the minor prophets that if you pause and think about them, you're going to be like, that's kind of interesting. Learn how to live. Learn how to live through the Christian living lessons that are in these minor prophets. I sort of put Christian living in parentheses because the whole Bible is full of Christian living. Everything is about our life. But there are certain things that are very more specific about what we should be doing today, what we should be doing tomorrow, what we should have done yesterday. And you'll find a number of lessons. If you take that approach that I'm going to find these in the minor prophets, you will find many of them. And last of all, most importantly, the value that these minor prophets can offer is you can be inspired by the messages of hope. These books are full of messages of hope. And if we read these and we can be inspired by them, we can grow and continue on our journey. So those are the things we'll be covering in this message. So let's jump into these. The Ochron rises in the Kanji. The Kerlon and the Tul originated in the south slopes of the Kintlel. The Senglel comes from the Eider and the Delger. Nobody knows what I just said, I'm pretty sure. Didn't come from the Bible, don't worry. Don't be thinking, which book is that from? You had no context. I gave you no context. I talked about some words, names that you've likely never heard from. So they made no connection. Now, if you actually knew what I was talking about, you'd probably still say, well, whatever, that's not important, I'll just move on. But given that you had no connection to what I just said, it had no meaning. You won't remember. I'm doubting you'll remember anything of what I just said. But if I had given you some context, and if you already had a little bit of connection with what I was about to say or what I said, there might be a few things that have a chance of sticking. So let me try this again. I'm about to tell you the names of six major tributaries to the Mississippi River. The Arkansas River, starting in Leadville, Colorado, the Illinois River, starting in Gundy County, Illinois, the Missouri River, starting in Brower Spring, Montana, the Ohio River, starting in Allegheny Township, Pennsylvania, and the Red River, starting in Harmon County, are the major tributaries to the Mississippi River. Pretty meaningless what I just read, I would think, but you knew that I was about to tell you about some rivers that all flowed into the Mississippi. You're familiar with most, if not all, of those rivers. You're familiar with the location, certainly the states that I mentioned. Probably had a little more meaning. You had some connection. So again, as you are about to study the Minor Prophets, if you take the time before you read the Minor Prophets, whichever one you're choosing, try to read an overview. LifeHopeAndTruth.com has an overview of each of the books of the Bibles. So if you're ready to go and study one of these Minor Prophets, I would recommend that you start. Don't start by reading, but maybe start by reading an overview and trying to understand what is the outline of the book, what am I about to read? And I think you have a chance of gaining more out of that. By the way, the first names and things that I'm sure I mispronounced, I'm sure I did a great job of mispronouncing. Those are very important rivers in the country of anyone? Mongolia? Yep. They're real names. I didn't make them up. All right. So again, thinking about reading these, I'll share a little bit about each of the books. Now, I am going to, in this message, I ignored Jonah. Now, Jonah is part of the Minor Prophets, but I feel like the book of Jonah, and Jonah gets a lot of attention. He's probably, especially for young children, next to Noah, he's probably the one that people hear the most about in his story. So we'll be spending more time in the 11 out of the 12. Hosea. So what is Hosea all about? At least as an overview. Hosea's message is primarily to the northern kingdom of Israel. His prophecies begin when the northern kingdom of Israel is at its peak. There were many wealthy people in Israel at the time. The theme is God's mercy on Israel, who will come to God's repentance. Hosea, interestingly, being a prophet of God was not an easy job for most of them. We heard some of the sufferings and trials that Daniel went through. Hosea was required to take a wife, a harlot for a wife, and he had to name his three children. You know, and give he had to give his three children names based on God's condemnation of Israel. Pretty tough. So I'm not going to go through each of these books, at least not all at once. I'm planning to sprinkle these in as we go through some of the other strategies. So the next strategy that I want to mention and talk about is what people are like. If we start and we're like, okay, I'm going to study this particular book, whether it's Nahum or Zephaniah or whichever one you want to go through, if you think, I'm going to find some learning about how people of that day were like, what were they like? You know, we think about these minor prophets, a lot of people know that, oh, in these minor prophets, God is there condemning people and talking about punishment. Well, why? Why was he doing that? It certainly did happen. Well, it's because of what people were like then, what people are like now, what people will be like in the future, and maybe a little bit about what we're like at times. So let's start in Amos, and we'll look at Amos chapter 2 and read verses 10 through 13. Amos 2, 10 through 13. Again, as we're trying to learn from these minor prophets, if we have this approach of active reading, actively trying to learn, and specifically if we think about and try to actively learn about what people are like, we can gain a lot from this. Amos 2, chapter 2, verse 10. And it was, I brought you up from the land of Egypt and led you 40 years through the wilderness to possess the land of the Amorite. I raised up some of your sons as prophets and some of your young men as Nazirites. Is that not so, O you children of Israel, says the Lord? So this is the setup. Israelites are being set up here. God said, hey, I took care of you. I brought you out of this land. I put some of your people into a really good and important positions, right? And then verse 12, but you gave the Nazirite wine to drink. You commanded the prophets, saying, do not prophesy. Behold, I am weighed down by you as a cart full of sheaves is weighed down. This is the people. This is who God had to deal with. He had to deal with people that he'd cared for, took good care of, and yet they turned their back on him. These are the kinds of people that God was dealing with and that lived in this time of the minor prophets and continue to this day. You know, what were people doing just going through the minor prophets? People were oppressing the poor, treading down the poor, diverting justice from the poor, and crushing the needy. They hated good and loved evil. They shed innocent blood. They abhorred justice and perverted equity. You know, Nahum describes a city full of lies and robbery. This is what people were like during these periods of the minor prophets. Though I underlined in my notes the abhorring justice and perverting equity. How much of that is going on in this world nowadays? How much justice is not happening? How much of this equity has just been turned upside down, and what people view as equity now is so different than how God views equity? This is the kind of people that God was dealing with. I was mentioning to my wife this morning, I was reading this article in terms of justice. So there was a situation where a woman shot her, husband, or shot a man and killed him. And the case was coming to court. A prosecutor was prosecuting this woman for shooting and killing a man. And the judge was confused. The judge was like, wait, which case are we talking about? Because the prosecutor was bringing the charge of unlawfully discharging a weapon against this woman who had shot and killed a man. And the judge was like, is this the right case? I'm not sure if things don't, you just, this is about somebody who killed somebody and this is the charge? Talk about abhorring justice. That's what it looks like to me, at least. Going on, how are people described in the minor prophets? There were problems of idolatry, harlotry, drunkenness, pride, not seeking God, complacency, not receiving correction, not trusting in God, not drawing near to God. There was swearing, lying, killing, stealing, and committing adultery. There was bloodshed upon bloodshed. So much evil was going on in those days. We should understand that. When men and women choose to do their own way, this is the result. Now, there was at least one case where people obeyed. There was a case recorded in Haggai where people obeyed the voice of God in Haggai. So there was a little bit of good news, but mostly it looked more like what is recorded in Micah. If you want to turn to Micah chapter 3 and verses 2 and 3 here. You know, how does God see sin? How does God see people that are doing wrong? Micah 3, 2. You who hate good and love evil, who strip the skin from my people and the flesh from their bones, who also eat the flesh of my people, flay their skin from them, break their bones, and chop them in pieces like meat for the pot, like flesh in the cauldron. This is what people were like. This is what people who don't obey God are like. And we can gain a lot of understanding about that as we go through the minor prophets. As a contrast, what is God like? We'll talk about that, but first, I'm going to go back and just hit the overview of Joel and Amos, just as a side part here. Again, just thinking about the overview of these books. And by the way, I created a worksheet, and I was going to hand it out to some of the younger people, but they're not here today. But there's a stack of them at the back of the room. If you have any interest and want a challenge with the minor prophets, you can pick that up after church. So Joel, what's a quick overview of Joel? Joel's primary focus is Judah. A major theme of Joel's prophecies is teaching about the day of the Lord. When God will severely judge his own people and the rest of the world. And of course, Joel has a famous passage, right, that we read during Pentecost often, and of course Peter used it during his most famous sermon. How about Amos? God sent Amos as a prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel. It was a time of wealth for Israel, which led to what? Wealth led to godlessness and corruption. There's an interesting part in Amos where his prophecies are interrupted, and he is in an argument with a priest named Amaziah. And at one point, Amos says, I was not even, the priest is like, stop prophesying, just stop it. And Amos is like, I was not even a prophet. I was just a sheep herder. It's kind of an interesting exchange. All right, so we saw what people are like. So what is God like? And what can we hear and learn about God as we study the minor prophets? Again, we can take this active approach of saying, as I study this minor prophet or go through each one of them, I'm going to learn about what God is like. I'm going to let these prophets in these books teach me about God. What can we find? God is the Almighty Creator. Amos writes that God formed mountains, created the wind. He declares to man what his thoughts are and makes the morning darkness. God treads through the high places of the earth. Habakkuk describes God's brightness as like the light. He has rays flashing from his hands. The mountains saw God and trembled. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. Habakkuk heard God, and his body trembled. His lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered his bones. What a powerful God we serve. Rottenness entered his bones. I assume that was figuratively, but wow, that's some power. Are any of you familiar with the movie Princess Bride? So in this movie, the hero is being tortured to death. And it seems like maybe he's even died. His friends take him and they take him to, we'll just call this guy a medical professional. And this medical professional is examining him and they're like, oh, is he dead? Is he dead? And the guy is like, he's dead, but he's not dead. And he brings him back to life and of course saves the day. But, you know, in this rotten all the way to the bone, when God comes and you see his power, it's like we're dead. He is so powerful, and that's who we serve. Nahum tells us that the Lord has his way in the whirlwind, in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. Let's turn to Nahum and read a couple verses about what is God like, and what do the minor prophets tell us about what God is like? Nahum chapter 1, verses 4 through 6. And he rebukes the sea and makes it dry. He dries up all the rivers. Bashan and Carmel wither, and the flower of Lebanon wilts. The mountains quake before him. The hills melt, and the heaven heaves at his presence, and the earth heaves at his presence. Yes, the world and all who dwell it. Who can stand his indignation, and who can endure the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and rocks are thrown down by him. And of course, why is God having all of this anger? Well, it's because of what we had just previously looked at, all the sinning and evil that people were up to. Here are some character traits that we can pull and learn and see in the minor prophets. God states clearly that he is not a man. There is a difference. God is good, and he does not change. He does get angry. He gets angry at sins like pride and injustice, taking advantage of the poor, and not being loyal or not listening or receiving correction. He hates divorce. He is jealous and he avenges, but he is slow to anger. He allowed Israel and Judah and the other nations to sin for years and years and years. He patiently worked with them. He sent prophets again and again. He was slow to anger, but eventually, knowing him with his incredible wisdom, knowing what was best, he came with his power and punished them. Let's look at Micah chapter 7, verse 18 and 19. Micah 7, 18 and 19. We can learn a lot about God and who he is as we study the minor prophets. Who is God like, pardoning iniquity and passing over the transgression of the remnant of the heritage? Does he not retain his anger forever? Because he delights in mercy. God uses his anger when he needs to, but what he wants to do, as this verse says, is he wants to delight in mercy. He wants to be forgiving. That's what he wants. Verse 19, he will again have compassion on us and will subdue our iniquities. You will cast our sins into the depths of the sea. As we repent, God is going to cast our sins into the sea. They're gone. What an amazing God we serve. Hosea put it like this: the Lord will come to us like the rain, like the latter and the former rains. What a peaceful, gentle, wonderful thing this is. Let's read a couple verses in Hosea. God is loving, and we can learn that as we study the minor prophets. Hosea chapter 11, and we'll read verse 1 and then verses 3 and 4. Hosea 11:1 says, "When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son." Verse 3, "I taught Ephraim to walk, taking him by the arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I drew them with gentle cords, with bands of love, and it was to them as those who take the yoke from their necks. I stooped and I fed them." This is our God. He's a loving God, and we can learn so much about him through the minor prophets. And again, if we take this active approach to reading the minor prophets and trying to learn about God, we'll gain a lot. Quick look at Obadiah and Micah. Obadiah is the shortest book of the, think about these as ads. We're on an ad break. I just finished one. We have to jump to some ads, so you have to put up with the ads. So Obadiah is the shortest book of the Old Testament. The prophecy is largely concerned with the condemnation and punishment of Egypt for treachery toward its brother Israel. Micah. This is a little bit interesting. Here, the theme of the book of Micah is summarized in two words, doom and then hope. There's doom to deal with sin and then hope. But Micah's words were used to save Jeremiah. I didn't really know this, but I came across this. It's kind of interesting. So Jeremiah was about to be killed for prophesying doom to Judah, but Jeremiah's supporters argued that Micah preached that Judah would be punished during the time of King Hezekiah, and Micah was not put to death. So based on a case law, so to speak, neither was Jeremiah. All right, so what else in the minor prophets? Interesting facts and trivia. Again, to try to stay more engaged as we go through these, I have trouble with this. Reading the book of Micah, it's hard for me. So I wanted to try to figure out how can I gain more? What can I do to get more out of this? I think looking into the facts and the interesting trivia. You know, being curious is a good thing. Well, unless you're a cat. Although being a curious cat is okay, even unless you've used 8 of your lives. If you've used 8 of your lives and you're a cat, don't be curious anymore. That might be the end of you. So, but within the boundaries of God's way of life, we should be curious. We should be asking questions. We should be thinking about things, trying to learn more, trying to understand, because there's some amazing things that God is telling us throughout the whole Bible, but especially today as I talk about the minor prophets. Let's look at, Joel chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. And I'm going to read this from the Living Bible translation. I liked how it put this. It says, "Listen, you aged men of Israel, everyone, listen in all your lifetime, yes, in all your history. Have you ever heard such a thing as I am going to tell you? In years to come, tell your children about it. Pass the awful story down from generation to generation." There's some incredible things that God is telling us in these passages. We should be paying attention. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 5. Habakkuk 1, verse 5. It says here, "Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told to you." So again, some amazing things, but also some trivial things as well that I find a little bit interesting. You know, you can read as you go through the minor prophets and find a mention of someone who leaps over the threshold. You ever passed by that and wondered, what does this mean? It may be referring back to this idol Dagon that fell down, and the priest at that time would not step on the threshold. In Asia, it's interesting that a lot of the houses traditionally have a very tall threshold. And the reason for that, at least as I understand, is the threshold is to block the evil spirits. So the evil spirits are hovering and coming along the ground. And if you have a tall threshold, they can't come into your house. So I don't know if that's somehow tied into this saying that was in the minor prophets or not. People in the Minor Prophets are told not to prattle. The prophets wrote of a flying scroll, a plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel, and a man with a measuring line in his hand, which is good, because these would have been very handy to help build the houses that were mentioned, the winter house, the summer house, the paneled houses, and the houses of ivory that will perish. Inside the kitchen of these houses, there were adulterers who were like an oven heated by a baker. People's hearts were prepared like an oven. The baker sleeps all night. They're all hot like an oven. Ephraim is a cake unturned. Ever wondered what that even means? Wine was drank from bowls. And despite this baking, at some point, God gave the people a cleanness of teeth. Their teeth were clean because they had no food to eat. In bedrooms, people laid on beds of ivory, stretched out on couches. They sang idly to the sound of stringed instruments and invented musical instruments. You can find mention of phrases like the apple of my eye. We read about women with wings like the wings of a stork and two staffs whose names were Beauty and Bonds. There was Launderer's Soap and Earthquake and the Pleiades and the Orion. People shrugged their shoulders and stopped their ears so that they could not hear. Their hearts were like flint. Faithfulness was described like a morning cloud and like the early dew that goes away. People at that time were not very faithful. We can learn some botany as we go through the Minor Prophets. Trees had a prominence in the messages. Amorites were compared to the heights of cedars and the strength of oaks. People liked the shade of trees, so they burned incense under oaks, poplars, and terebinths. We read about hemlocks, olive trees, green cypress trees, sycamore, fig, myrtle, and pomegranate trees. Justice was turned to wormwood. People's way were hedged about with thorns. Nettles possessed the valuable silver. Thorns would be in their tents. Israel was like grapes. In the future, the mountains will drip with new wine. The hills flow with honey. Israel will grow like a lily. Have you ever thought about that, if you come across that? For us, you know, God is watching us grow and watching us. Does he think about a flower, a beautiful flower growing, and look at us and see us growing like this beautiful flower? That's God's view. That's what he sees. I don't look like a flower, but God's not looking on the outside of me, fortunately. Hopefully on the inside, as God looks at me, he sees me growing like a flower. We can learn some zoology as we go through the Minor Prophets. Will a lion roar in the forest when he has no prey? Israel, Judah, and other nations were compared to things like a stubborn calf, the lamb foraging in open country, a moth, a silly dove without sense, a wild donkey, a trained heifer, a trembling bird, cows of Bashan, jackals, storks, ostriches, roaring lions, and evening wolves. God describes himself as a lion, a leopard by the road, a bear deprived of her cubs. There's a good reason to obey God. He's going to be like a bear, a mother bear without her cubs, a wild beast. God said he will roar like a lion. He has teeth of a lion and fangs of a fierce lion. Let the men who sacrifice kiss the calves. Locusts crawled through the Minor Prophets. There were chewing locusts, swarming locusts, crawling locusts, consuming locusts, and generals were compared to great grasshoppers. Many other animals are referenced. There were horses, red, sorrel, and white, swift steeds, faster than leopards, and fiercer than evening wolves. Eagles, serpents, and doves make appearances. Challenge yourself to find these things and then think about them. Enjoy a little bit about what you're reading as you go through. Don't just pass through. Pause. Think about it. Consider what's the words that are being used. All right, we're going to take a quick look at Nahum and Habakkuk. So again, these are like ad breaks. So if you don't like the ads, subscribe to the premium version and you can skip the ads. Just click on the link below. All right, Nahum. Nahum could be looked at as Jonah part two. The theme of the prophecy is the destruction of Nineveh. So Jonah prophesied to Nineveh and they were saved, but eventually, of course, they turned to do evil and wrong. So Nahum is prophesies on the destruction of Nineveh. Now, this message, interestingly, was actually received and heard in Judah, and they actually appreciated the message. They were comforted and consoled by this message because their enemy was being destroyed. Habakkuk was commissioned to foretell the invasion and the destruction of Judah by the Chaldeans. Now, this book of Habakkuk is essentially two questions from Habakkuk to God, God answering them, and then Habakkuk's prayer is recorded. All right, the next strategy. Again, as you're studying the minor prophets, you're actively reading, trying to learn, think about the Christian living directions and instructions that you can gain as you go through the minor prophets, because there are many there. These are not just books that talk about destruction and sin, but they tell us and teach us how to live. The book of Hosea tells us that God desires mercy and not sacrifice. His knowledge is more valuable than burnt offerings. The ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them. In one of my favorite verses in Micah 6:8 writes that what does the Lord require of us? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Let's look at Hosea 12, verse 6. These are lessons in the minor prophets, those books that were written more than 2,000 years ago, more than 2,500 years ago. But they teach us, and we learn from them. Hosea 12, verse 6 says, "So you, by the help of your God, return. Observe mercy and justice, and wait on your God continually." I have some idea about mercy and justice, and not that I apply them as good as I should, but then when I look at this, wait on your God continually, that's definitely something that can require some meditation and thought to understand, what does that mean? What should I do when I read this? How should I act? I think it's important. The book of Joel tells us to turn to God with all our hearts, with fasting, weeping, and mourning. We need to rend our hearts. Joel, Amos, and Zephaniah tell us to seek God and have life. Amos gives us information on how to get along with other people. He challenges us with the question, can two walk together unless they are agreed? Think about that question and think about who you're choosing to walk with. He writes, this is very interesting, and I think this is very important for us. He writes that in evil times, the prudent should keep silent. That can be a tough one at times, right? Sometimes I come across that I read about some articles or some breaking news, and I feel the need to shout, say, stop! But Amos, what does he say? In evil times, the prudent keep silent. We should seek good and not evil, hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gates, let justice run down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. Recently, my family was able to see a number of waterfalls, and just the amount of water and the power coming down those waterfalls and down the rivers. Just think about how, if we were like this, where our righteousness was like that of a mighty stream. That's what God is challenging us to do, and how we should live and how we should act. The book of Habakkuk tells us that we should live by faith. It says, the just shall live by faith. This is something very famous we're all familiar with. The just shall live by faith. Then the book pronounces 5 woes, listing things that we should not be doing. Let's look at Zephaniah chapter 2 and verse 3. What are we learning about how we should be living today and tomorrow? How we should be changing our life? Zephaniah 2 and verse 3 says, "Seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth, who have upheld his justice. Seek righteousness. Seek humility. It may be that you will be hidden in the day of your Lord's anger." We've read about what God is like when he's angry. We want to be hidden. So we should be thinking about how we will seek justice and seek humility. Zechariah tells us to do these things. He says, "Speak the truth to your neighbor. Give judgments of truth, justice, and peace. Do not think evil in your hearts. Execute justice. Show mercy and compassion." These are so many things that we can learn. Again, when we're approaching these minor prophets, take this attitude of an approach of active reading. I'm going to learn how I should change my life as I go through these. All right, Zephaniah, what is it like? Zephaniah is a prophetic revelations that stem warning that with stern warnings that occurred during Josiah's reign. The theme is the day of the Lord and pointing towards the dramatic and earth-shaking events. Haggai is another one of these books that's interesting. So Haggai was a prophet a little bit like Jonah in that he had some success with his message because he told the Jews that had returned and they were supposed to rebuild the temple. They had stopped working. Haggai said, build the temple, and they did. So he was sent to exert and encourage the people to complete the temple and had success there. All right. So if you were to describe our Bible in one word, what one word might you use? Now, that's not fair. There's so much here. But if you thought about it for half a second, what word might come to your mind? So how about wisdom? This is a book of wisdom for sure. How about love? Certainly a book of love. Mercy? We've talked a lot about, mentioned mercy a number of times. This is absolutely a book of mercy. How about Christ? Certainly an important one. Well, for me at least, I want to mention at least in this section is hope. This is a book of hope. Throughout this book is hope. It's hope for our lives. It gives meaning and purpose. And through the minor prophets, we can see so much hope. And if we take the approach that I'm going to learn from this hope, I'm going to be inspired by the hope that I read in the minor prophets. I'm going to change my life because of the hope that I could read about in the minor prophets. There can be a lot of value gained. There are so many festival verses in the minor prophets that we're very familiar with. We read them at Pentecost. We'll read them at the Feast of Tabernacles, maybe the Feast of Trumpets. Let's look at Hosea chapter 1 and verse 10. Hosea 1 and verse 10. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it shall come to pass in the place where it is said to them, you are not my people. So at a certain point, God said, you are not my people because you are doing wrong. But here's the best part. Then it shall become said to them, you are the sons of the living God. What an awesome thing to consider that one point God will say to us, you are my son, you are my daughter. That's something that we have to look forward to and something that should cause us to act in certain ways and to be repentant and be converted. Hosea shares a message of God's mercy on his people. A time is coming when the children of Israel will seek God and fear him. God will turn away his anger and love them freely. Joel writes that the future rites of the future blessings where rain will come down in due time, threshing floors will be full of wheat, and vats will overflow with wine and oil. The people will eat and be satisfied. You know, for us, probably this doesn't have as much impact. Most of us, I believe anyway, have food and are not hungry, but there are people who are suffering around the world, and there may come a time in our lives where we will not have food. But God is looking forward to this time where we will be satisfied. They will praise God's name and not be put to shame. Micah writes how God will assemble the lame and gather the outcast. Zephaniah, let's look at Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 12. Two more verses in my message today. So Zephaniah 3 verse 12 and verse 13. There's so much hope that we can read about. I will leave in your midst a meek and humble people, and they shall trust in the name of the Lord. The remnant of Israel shall do no unrighteousness and speak no lies, nor shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth. What an awesome time to look forward to. There will be a meek and humble people. We'll drop down to verse 17 in the same book. So Zephaniah 3, verse 17. Zephaniah 3, 17. The Lord your God in your midst, the mighty one will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing. What is that like? God is going to quiet us with his love. You know, how many times do we have things going on in our lives? So much noise going on around us. So many things that we're worried about. So many troubles. So many things we're trying to solve. We're getting stressed. We're getting worried. God is there to just quiet things. What an incredible feeling that's going to be like. And of course, we experience that as we study and pray and obey God. He does that for us. But it's going to be so much more for the whole world in the future. What a wonderful message of hope that we can see from these minor prophets. All right, Zechariah. Quick overview of Zechariah. Zechariah's prophecies, I wrote in my notes, Zechariah is a book oozing with hope. There's so many verses of hope in Zechariah, but it is a book with prophecies and references to Jesus Christ's first and second comings. This is a book that has a lot of visions. It's interesting if you want to kind of consider some of the visions that are in the book of Zechariah. Please take a look and read through them, think about them. But there are so many messages of hope for the future. And Malachi, the last book. Malachi is a book of five messengers. Malachi himself, the priests, although they did not perform their duties. John the Baptist, to prepare for the first coming of Jesus Christ. And the end-time Elijah, who will prophesy and prepare the way for the Christ's second coming. All right, so those were the strategies. Again, my intent was to try to encourage you and then offer you some suggested ways to get more out of these books. Two advanced techniques I'll just leave here. I won't go into detail, but if you do take the time to learn the names and the places, so many countries and places and people are mentioned, if you slow down enough to learn about these and take the time to kind of understand where these places were, you'll connect so much better. Just something simple like knowing Edom and Esau, I think everyone knows this, knowing they're the same is helpful. Knowing that Israel is Ephraim, when God refers to Ephraim or says something about Ephraim, very simple examples, we can connect that and say, okay, that's really another name for Israel often. So taking the time is an advanced technique, and also looking back and forth between the New Testament and the Old Testament, seeing how the quotes, how the minor prophets were quoted in the New Testament by Jesus or by the apostles. We can gain a lot from there. We can understand how they understood these passages and how they applied them in their lives. So I encourage you to dig into the minor prophets. For me, reading them is a bit of a challenge, but if you take your time and actively look for lessons, you'll find there's a lot of value there in these books.